Pandemonium Reigns.
Pandemonium Reigns podcast. What is up? It is your boy Mike, about to dive into Tennessee at Oklahoma, September 21st, 7:30 p.m. Eastern kick. Again, Vols traveling to Norman as seven and a half point favorites. That's significant. But we all know the significance of this game. The storylines are so rich. This matchup is so storyline rich. There are going to be as many takes as people talking about Hopple going back. All of the lead up. That's, I think, exactly what the aftermath of this game is going to look like when you're scrolling ESPN or Yahoo or whatever, wherever you get your sporting news, you're scrolling Twitter, X, whatever. Next week, I think it's going to just be littered with fallout aftermath of this Tennessee-Oklahoma matchup. There's so many storylines of this game that I've swapped my setup around. I've got all of my notes, all of my outlines in front of me on a table, on a desk. Can't even believe all the storylines. And I basically just listed them out, not the way I'm going to present them on this episode. I'm not going to read a sermon to you or anything like that. But again, there's so many that I don't know that I've ever had to organize this much or kind of mentally prep this much for an episode. And I want to thank you for tuning into the Pandemonium Reigns podcast. And I want to jump right into those right now. Again, as already mentioned on this episode, as you've heard from probably long lost relatives, you know, you've probably had some stray animals come up to you and mention it. Yes, Josh Hopple played at Oklahoma. He makes his return to Norman to the opposing sideline on Saturday night. If you haven't heard it yet, there you go. Now you know. That's obviously one of the lead storylines for this game. I mean, again, he was second in the Heisman runnings. He brought them right back to the top step of national prominence, including a national title victory when he was the quarterback, the unheralded incoming quarterback that he was. He delivered Oklahoma back to the promised land. They haven't been back there since, to that top step of the podium, if you will, just using that example. And obviously, he goes back on Saturday night. It's huge for both sides. I mean, it doesn't look good for Venables, for Oklahoma administration, for Bob Stoops firing him 10 years ago. It doesn't look good for any of those Sooners if Hopple goes in and gets the win that many of us, spoiler alert, including myself, think that Tennessee's going to get. That's not a good look. One of your own comes back and delivers you a big fat L on the biggest stage of this college football weekend. Dan talked about when he previewed this game, you know, Sankey, the SEC, knew what they were doing by, you know, as Oklahoma's first SEC game brings Hopple back home. I'm going to take it a step further. Everything is kind of leading up to Georgia-Bama in a week or two. They're off this week. There's nothing else happening in this conference this week, just about. That's about where the SEC slate is this weekend. It's kind of that way across the country. I mean, there's just not a ton happening this weekend. This is undoubtedly the biggest game of the week, and it was a no-brainer, obviously, for College Game Day to be there. We know all those things. Again, and if you haven't heard it here, you know, you're hearing it now. If you haven't before, Hopple is going back to where he played. Yes, that's a fact. He's obviously got great familiarity with Venables, with co-offensive coordinator Seth Luttrell. I think Luttrell, when Hopple talks about his best man or the groomsman that was in his wedding being on staff there, I'm pretty sure it's Luttrell. They're homies. They were on the roster together, I believe. There's also Joe John Finley. That's a great name. I don't care who you are. That's an elite name. He's on the staff there. He played shortly after Hopple. He's probably, you know, someone that was on the team when Hopple was in those early day roles, those GA role days that he was there. He's got great familiarity with these guys. Venables was the defensive coordinator when they won the national championship, and he's obviously worked at Oklahoma for years, and now he's back. He's the guy that they went with to replace Lincoln Riley, as we all know. So, you know, that's a storyline. That's part of this narrative. There's also, and this is where Hopple's disdain for Oklahoma comes in. It's not so much the Sooner brand. It's not the fact that they wear Jordan and, you know, other schools don't get to, yada, yada. It's Bob Stoops. Bob Stoops fired Josh Hopple 10 years ago. If you haven't heard that yet, you're hearing it now. We all know this. Stoops decided to put out a statement this week. You know, I'm not going to do any media requests. I'm a Sooner through and through. Hopple was my MVP recruit. but he forgot that it's H-E-U-P-E-L. He forgot how to spell the name, or forgot to spell check, or, you know, some pretty blatant disrespect, because I do think things like that matter. I mean, if, you know, when Hoppe was given that speech after the North Carolina State game, if it was a written statement and, you know, he misspelled Eric Berry's name, or you know, he attempted to say, you know, Reggie Watt, he said Reggie Henderson or something like that, just something goofy. You know, I'm taking it as disrespect. That's partially my personality. I also know the competitor that we hear about and that we see Josh Hoppe being. And, you know, you just don't have to convince me that that was a massive oversight or again, disrespect, not taking the time to fix it, you name it, whatever. I mean, it, just a poor statement. I understand not making media appearances this week because he probably wouldn't have had any time to do anything else, you know, being the guy that he is for Oklahoma and that he was in the sport overall. I mean, he probably wouldn't have had any time to do anything else. But, you know, I didn't miss that. I caught that. I saw it immediately, rolled my eyes, and probably said a few words that I wouldn't say on here, if I'm honest. Just don't like it. I mean, you say that he's the MVP recruit, that he did all, you, we all know what he did for you, bringing you back to the, you know, top step of the sport again, but you don't have the decency to spell the man's name correctly. Whatever. Maybe I'm making too big of a deal out of it. Maybe Hoppe's like, okay, whatever, dude. You, I don't care. It's just, I noticed it, and I think it's ridiculous, but Stoops, again, obviously the one that Hoppe's, you know, feelings, his, if he's got rage, if he's got anger, if he's got that chip on his shoulder, which I, you know, I mean, tell me that he doesn't and prove it. You're going to have a tough time doing that. It all goes back to Bob Stoops, I think, and making the decision to replace Hoppe. They obviously had a rougher offensive year that year that they, you know, that they replaced him, but the defense was a problem as well, except there was a Stoops running the defense. It was Mike Stoops. So, you know, not a great look. Don't love it. Whatever. But if you've heard any comments from Hoppe this week, you know, he's loose. He made a great joke. Monday press conference, expecting the Oklahoma fan base and the fans in attendance more so to be quiet and orderly when Tennessee's on offense. I thought that was pretty funny. I think that's indicative of his mood. I also don't think that he gets too tense in moments like this. I mean, leading up to, you know, the 2022 Alabama game, he was making time to go shoot hoops with his son at the basketball facility. I think that's pretty dope. We all know that he at home games throws to his son's pregame, that he's out there lobbing tutties to his son in the end zone. It's pretty great sight to see. It's pretty wholesome. But he seems loose. You know, will he? And I think we'll know just how loose he is, how I don't expect him to be not locked in. I mean, I think he's going to have a great game plan because of Venable's defense alone. If there was nothing else to this game, if it was Team A and Team B with no logos, no team colors, just 22 players on the field, he's running the offense. Venable's is ultimately leading a defense that he's facing. I think he's going to have a great game plan because Venable's, if nothing else, is an outstanding defensive mind. He's proven to be a pretty good head coach. We'll see if 2022 or 2023 is the more norm for him. He's obviously got some issues with this team that they're going to have to iron out, whether it's finding ways to do that this year, whether that's living in the portal to kind of bandage some of those issues until they can get some, you know, some proper high school recruits in there to do that. Whatever it is, he's a great defensive mind. So I think that Hoppe would have a great game plan, a, you know, respect your opponent game plan, if you will, of how he's going to be attacked. What he's going to see, preparing Nico for that, all those things. You know, I think that goes without question. But we'll know how tight or how loose Josh Hoppe is probably if we see some, you know, 3rd and 7+ that leads to 4th and 4+ in, you know, the latter half of your own territory. You're inside you're approaching the 50, but you're still in your own territory. What does Hoppe do? You know, is he making decisions that we haven't seen him make? Is he playing the field position game, which would probably be smart because, you know, I'm going to get to it in a moment, but I think you're going to have to help Oklahoma win this game or at least make some mistakes for them to capitalize on. I don't think they beat you straight up in a 60-minute football game with the on-field issues that they have with this roster. I don't think they do it. We'll get there in a minute. But, again, where's Hoppe's mind? Where's it at? Where's his mind at? How's he handling those situations? Again, whether it's, you know, okay, here it is. On 3rd and 8, on the 35-yard line, is he running a draw for the 45th time, playing it conservative, just looking to punt it away? Is he chucking it deep, or you know, calling the shot play? Where's the mind at? And again, if that leads to fourth and five or more or less, you tell me, you know, what's he going to do in those situations? Is he going to handle it like usual? And if it's, you know, pretty short, go pretty aggressive and get the yards? Or is he going to, again, play tight, maybe too conservative? You know, where's he going to be at? He's been a pretty aggressive coach. I kind of love that. We'll see how he handles it, if he handles it differently, and I think we'll know a lot of where his head's at, you know, stemming from those moments in those situations. But, again, we'll see, and I'll come back to that in a moment as well. Additional storylines. I mean, if a Tennessee player wasn't transferring to Oklahoma when Heupel came in, you know, Key Lawrence, Eric Gray, you know, where were they going? I mean, we know where Henry T went. We don't really care. We know that a lot of guys left, a lot of them downgraded in their situation that didn't play out the way that they saw it coming. And I think there's a perfect example of that still on Oklahoma's roster today in DeJon Terry, who we know transferred into Tennessee from, I believe Kansas might have done some time and spent a year here or there at a JUCO as well. DeJon Terry played early on in the Heupel era and kind of showed promise at times. And then, if I'm not mistaken, you know, leading up to his exit from Tennessee, wanted to get closer back to Mississippi where he's from. I think he's got a child. And, you know, I looked it up. Meridian, Mississippi is where he's listed as being from. That's 5-6 hours from Knoxville. So he did the logical thing in going closer to Meridian, Mississippi, and going dang near 10 hours away. So I don't know what that's about. I'm assuming that an NIL promise was made or something like that. You know, he was recruited to Oklahoma, however he got there, whatever. He just did the opposite of what he was saying he was going to do. Again, there are roster, you know, moves that led to Oklahoma. And obviously, that was a different era. Lincoln Riley made some of those additions and not Brent Venables, but still, the DJ Terry one's a little bit interesting. He'd have a dang tough time getting in on this defensive line rotation, and I think he's actually struggling to find starter reps out there, but it's interesting. It, you know, caught my eye, and he went, again, time and a half or double as far away from Meridian, Mississippi as Knoxville was, so I thought that was just quite crazy. But I mentioned Lincoln Riley. Tennessee and Oklahoma in the last 15 years have both lost head coaches to USC. So, again, just weird things that tie in these programs kind of way more recently, because we know that Oklahoma has had really good years with very few exceptions, much more so during Tennessee's downfall and all of the hiring and firing and coaches and all those things. It's pretty crazy, actually. You know, they've been really a model of consistency up until that first year of Venables, and with very few exceptions here, and, you know, just in between that. So thought that was interesting. Additional storylines. That's the narrative. That's the tendency of this episode. But, I mean, it's a quarterback game. It is a quarterback game, and there's four that factor in here to me. Josh Heupel, Seth Luttrell, who I already mentioned, and then, of course, Nico and Jackson Arnold. I mean, Nico, the number three national player in the 247 composite for the 2023 class. Jackson Arnold, the number eight national player in the 247 composite. Nico, the number two quarterback. Jackson Arnold, the number four quarterback. I mean, I'm just highlighting again, this game is kind of crazy how much relation there is between the programs, and it comes right down to the quarterback rankings coming out of high school as well. On the field, it's been a little bit more favorable, obviously, for Nico this year. He's got almost 10% completion percentage, same number of interceptions, one less touchdown, but on about 20 less attempts than Jackson Arnold. Jackson Arnold has done a lot of running, some of it for his life. He does lead the Sooners in rushing for the year, which is one of the several reasons why I'm going to take Tennessee to win this game. But he's got 159 rushing yards on the year. That has to be contained. He cannot beat Tennessee with his legs. That is a real possibility. I'm not saying Oklahoma can't win this game. 159 rushing yards on the year, two touchdowns, sacked 9 times through 3 games to Houston, Tulane, and Temple. That's, again, the biggest reason I'm taking Tennessee to win this game that I'll get into in a moment. Nico is over 100 rush yards, 102 on the year, one rushing touchdown to Jackson Arnold's 2, and about 8 less sacks on the year. And we know, again, there, and this is both a good and a bad thing, Jackson Arnold has not had the luxury of sitting like Nico has against lesser opponents for sure. But Nico's got less wear and tear. He's not going to be relied on the way that Jackson Arnold will in order to win this game. He's going to have to make plays, but he's not the bottom line necessarily on whether or not Tennessee wins the game. The defense and the run game could deliver that. The same cannot quite be said for Oklahoma because they don't run it very well, which could end up putting their defense in some bad, unfavorable positions, obviously. I think just in terms of taking a brief look into why I like Tennessee in this game, the weapons that he throws to, that these quarterbacks throw to, I'll take the receivers. And, of course, I mean, I'll put Tennessee's tight ends right now up there against just about anybody, but certainly Oklahoma's apply to that. The receiver group I like a lot more than I like Oklahoma's. We've seen Arnold have to rely on Deion Burks a lot, transfer from Purdue, and that's worked out. But, again, Tennessee's already kind of slowed down greatly. KC Concepcion, where – I mean, they did a better job than expected. McCall didn't have the time. I do think their offensive line from North Carolina State ranks a little bit better than Oklahoma's, which is all leads into why I'm taking Tennessee to win the game. I think they'll cover the 7.5. But nonetheless, one of the many storylines of this game. And then I want to take a brief look back real quick. We know that Tennessee and Oklahoma played this series in 2014 in Norman, 2015 in Knoxville, and that Oklahoma won both those games. If I had to sum up the 2014 game in a few words, the first one would be Oklahoma holding because Derek Barnett, I mean, was not blocked straight up for much of that game. You can't convince me that he was. And I don't know how many calls Tennessee got. Wasn't many. And there was a lot of holding going on in that game. I remember it vividly. The whole, across the offensive line, I remember that being a theme of the game. Not going to give any credit to Tennessee's coach at that time. I'm not going to be superstitious. Obviously, it was Butch Jones. But what a stretch that was at Ole Miss. Their defensive line wrecked house. At Oklahoma, that's just brutal because they were still pretty hot at the time, obviously. 2015, though, that's where the grace ran out for me because of things such as kicking from the half-yard line with a 230-pound running back and a running quarterback and a pretty good offensive line at the time. So, obviously these teams have played within the last 10 years, and they'll basically run the series back on a 10-year schedule of Norman and Knoxville in this year and next. So just the storyline for this game, I think Tennessee's got one win in their history over Oklahoma to Oklahoma's 3 or 4 or something like that. Not a series that's been played a ton. Excited for this one to continue to pop up as long as Tennessee continues to trend well and, it's not Oklahoma of old that it's been for this century because they've been dang good. The last storyline for me that I really want to dive into for a moment before talking about just the ins and outs of this game, Heupel needs this one. He needs this one not just for the optics of being a former Oklahoma legend an Oklahoma legend, not former. He needs this one because it's a night game on the road against a ranked opponent. I know that probably one, if not two, wins in Lexington at night have been ranked road wins, but Tennessee doesn't lose to Kentucky when things are going normal. There's been wins at Vanderbilt at night. There's a just horrid performance that still people think about that, if anything really gears up battered Vol syndrome, it's 2022 South Carolina. What a great environment that was. Tennessee obviously allowed that environment to stay hot because of the way the game went. If it had went as predicted, it would have been an empty stadium in the third quarter because we weren't talking about that being a game at all. Didn't matter that Spencer Rattler was quarterback. It didn't matter who the heck was head coaching them. They were terrible, and it didn't go that way. So that's a theme on the Tennessee side that you've got to start breaking. You can't continue to lose big games on the road or at night or whatever if this rise, this escalation in perception of Tennessee, these theoretical playoff runs are to be realized. You can't continue to drop games like this. It just can't happen. Good teams went on the road. They went at home. They went on neutral. They went everywhere. Doesn't matter if it's a one-point win. Georgia proved that to us last week. And what I can't echo enough what Dan said. What is Kentucky? Not talking about that right now. The point being, good teams find a way to win. Tennessee has to win this game on Saturday night. The trend of road losses and road night losses has to be broken. Obviously, I think the biggest road win of this era is either the grind that it took to win at Pitt early on in 2022 or the shellacking of LSU. I'd probably lean Pitt because we know that LSU loves their night games. They love their rowdy environment. It was 11 a.m. kick. Still impressive the way that Tennessee just discarded them that day and just demolished them. But in control from 1 minute into the game till obviously the season had ended. Tennessee owned that game. But environment-wise, it's time to start grabbing some of these games, especially when they're as winnable as the game is Saturday. And just want to take a moment at this point before diving into kind of why I'm not even going to call it the prediction. I mean, I'm just my thoughts on why Tennessee wins this game and perhaps handily wins this game. I want to tell you about North Forsyth Training and Fitness, our proud sponsor, NFTF, located 4015 Browns Bridge Road. Classes that run all throughout will fit into your schedule. A community-driven gym. You're going to make friends. You're going to find community in this gym, and you're also going to get your health, your fitness back on track if you need to, obviously. Owner, head coach, Jesse Foster. He's got all the credentials, all the experience to help you reach your goals. And again, classes just ranging all throughout the day to fit into your schedule. If you're interested and you're in the coming area, give Jesse a call, 706-633-6609. Make sure to let him know that the boys at Pandemonium Reign sent you. Now, why is Tennessee, Michael? Tell me, Michael, why is Tennessee going to go into Norman, Oklahoma and, again, cover a 7.5-point spread? Okay. I think there's advantages littered across the field. Okay. If I had to find advantages, in fact, for Oklahoma, I would say defensively, maybe. They'll at least have the crowd roaring behind their defense where if the crowd's making noise when Tennessee's defense is on the field, there's a problem. There is a problem. Mayday, Houston, we have a problem. But they're going to have the crowd at their back. They've got, again, Brent Venables, defensive mind status legend, national championship winning defensive coordinator, right? They've got him backing them and calling helping call the shots. Oklahoma's littered with co-coordinators everywhere. They've got tri-coordinators. I've not seen that I can recall. They've got three on offense and I think two or three on defense, and it's like every major position coach is a co-coordinator. That's weird, but it's probably like they needed this title to pay them what we want to pay them. The other thing about Oklahoma is they're littered with Sooners for life, if you will, on their staff. DeMarco Murray, Seth Littrell that I've already talked about, Brent Venables, again, just being a member of their history that I've talked about already, they're littered with them. And I think that's actually really neat. I love when that works out. It's painful when it doesn't work out. But again, and Heupel leaving Oklahoma as quarterback coach, offensive coordinator, is a perfect example of that because, again, he's going to go in and skull drag you on Saturday night if he can. He's going to go in and my thought is see just red. When he's got the opportunity to score, he's going to do it. If this were a game, if Oklahoma was really bad, and this were a game where Gaston Moore got in the early fourth quarter, or, Jake Merklinger got some reps, hey, freshman, still working on getting your four games in, this is one of them, yada, yada, before you can redshirt, I think the ball's being thrown. I think guys are being given reps to do that, and not only just to get them reps, but, this guy Stoops fired him. And he wasn't the only problem, maybe not even the biggest problem for them at that time. But again, talking about advantages, obviously Oklahoma is not that team where we expect Gaston Moore to be in by choice for any reason like that. But again, Venables, defensive staff, solid and sound, a couple All-American level players, Billy Bowman, Stutzman at linebacker, a good defensive line. I don't think it's Tennessee's defensive line, but it's a good one. I think it's going to be a problem for Oklahoma's just, it doesn't look like a Sooner offensive line. It just doesn't. And it's going to be a problem for them, maybe more so than any other SEC or equal level opponent that Tennessee's going to play when again, guys number 10, 11, 12, 9 are rotating in that rotation. And there's just not much drop off. I mean, if Tennessee finds a lead in this game, and I'm going to give some just, I know I'm talking about Tennessee winning this game and going away and comfortable and all this, but and I'll give some my thought keys to that in a moment. But if Oklahoma finds themselves in third and longs because they're not running the ball well, or perhaps Arnold took a sack, or, you know, whatever. If they're in passing situations on third down and James Pierce is in the game, or let's say it's Pierce and Joseph, whatever, the speed off the edge for this offensive line is going to be, it's going to be a problem like it was a problem for Kent State and UTC, because not that they're that bad, but they're not protecting their guy. He's got 9 sacks on the year to not great opponents. They're better than Tennessee's opponents, but 9 sacks through 3 games. That's, I can't state just how bad that is, how poorly Arnold does under pressure. Just, I mean, check out the stats and the numbers. They back that up. It's going to be a nightmare if Tennessee's able to just send, again, Pierce, Josephs, Tyree West, Don Bailey, whoever. If they're able to send the edges and not worry so much about, you know, Arnold picking up a short yardage first down, or a, you know, 3rd and 5 on a, you know, again, if they're able to just pin their ears back, I don't see how Oklahoma really even stays in this game. I mean, and I don't know, you know, exactly what's going to happen, but it's such a problem that they have along their offensive line, and they don't have a solution for it on the roster right now. Obviously, they do have some health concerns, and they are getting a couple guys back, it sounds like. But if it's not a guy at 100%, I don't think this is the game for them. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to have the orange-colored glasses on. I'm not trying to be a, you know, sunshiner instead of a negaball. I'm just saying, it is a horrid setup. You know, it does present the opportunity, perhaps, if they are able to find time, or if they're able to put themselves in favorable down and distances, to really be the team to test Tennessee's secondary through and through, like Dan and so many others have talked about this week, where NC State just wasn't able to do it regularly. We don't expect UTC to be able to do it. Kent State's worse than UTC, I'm sorry. Those teams couldn't test the secondary. I mean, a couple plays, Concepcion on that play deep out of the North Carolina State playbook, yes, that worked, but you're not running those. You're not running those multiple times in a game to try to scheme somebody up. You're just not doing it because it's going to get figured out, and things are going to happen. So they do have the chance to try to test Tennessee's secondary if they can get themselves in favorable down to distances. But the little bit of a football mind that I have tells me that defensive line travels well. Run game travels well. Tennessee's better in that category far and away. I mean, again, Arnold leads the Sooners in rushing with 159 yards. And mad credit to him, because in college, those sack yards are taken out of that. So he's probably over 200 on the year, if I had to guess. I don't know that. But Tennessee's got the makings of a two-headed and maybe a three-headed monster developing at running back. We know what a star Sampson is. If Tennessee's able to get Sampson in space, then just forget about it, Oklahoma. Like, it's not happening. Like, the defensive line problem that Tennessee's going to present to your offensive line is huge. If Sampson's able to cook in space, or any of these receivers, you know, Squirrel Watt has his breakout day, Brew McCoy gets a couple touchdowns, any of those things happen, and I just think it's a recipe for an ugly result for Oklahoma. And look, we know that any loss for your team is ugly. You don't want it. But I mean, I think really things could get out of hand if Oklahoma can't run the ball. If Tennessee's finding that easy pressure, like, again, we've talked about with just bringing 4, not having to get creative and, you know, bring backers and secondary players into blitz. And right now, I don't know why Tim Banks would call a single blitz on Saturday night. I mean, I'm dropping 7-8 guys. And, you know, and 8-9 guys trying to make Arnold find tight windows, probably still getting some pressure with 3 or with, again, just 4, with the guys that you have that you're going to be able to throw at this just terribly ranked offensive line that's not doing well. Sorry if I'm ranting about this matchup, but it could not be worse. It's when that is a mismatch for you, it's got to be one of the toughest ones to overcome. It's got to be like having a quarterback who just can't execute, like having a guy that can't hit open guys, or receivers that are dropping when he does hit them. Hint, hint, Florida State. It's up there with the worst, because even and maybe it is worse because, you know, you've got a guy with potential in Arnold, and we just might not see it. So, you know, again, I don't think you can overstate that, and I don't think I can find really wins in the matchups, outright wins, unless it's, again, the defensive scheme. Maybe Banks has been in his bag against these opponents that Tennessee has played. And again, the talent, the speed has stepped up just massively. It's crazy. But again, I'll give Venables the benefit of the doubt all day. Venables the benefit of the doubt all day, every day, 8 days a week. because he is who he is, and because he's got a couple, you know, a few guys that are really talented and a defense that's pretty talented overall on its own. So I'll give them that. You know, again, I can't find much to give them outside of that. I don't know what it is. And I'm again, it's not my goggles. It's not anything other than my limited knowledge of football. Seeing quarterbacks get hurried, make mistakes, get beat into the ground. I mean, all those things, I can't see them overcoming it. You know, I don't think there's any reason to really dive too much deeper than that, because I think it's the biggest thing. I think there's a lot of washes throughout the rest of the positions. I mean, Tennessee's got the obvious win, I think, in the running game. Again, I like the receiver and the tight end weapons. And I think the defensive line presents such a problem that Tennessee's defense could win this day. Not that Tennessee's going to win this game 3-0. They're going to have to score some points to do that, because Oklahoma should be able to get there somewhere along the way. But it's going to be really tough if they're not able to buy Mr. Arnold some time, or he's not able to be Houdini with those legs. And we've seen Tennessee get beat by that before. We've not seen it so much this year. When we did see it, it was McCall sliding because he was about to take a big hit, sliding too soon on a couple of occasions with the rule the way that it is. And look, Dan also went in. I could just co-sign, retweet everything Dan said about officiating, some of the rules, some of the decisions that are made and how bad they are. It's at an all-time high. But again, I think Tennessee is just, and it's so good to be in this position to be able to say this truthfully, because I always want to bring the truth here when I give you my opinion and tell you what it is. But Tennessee's in a position to just be too much for this team on Saturday night. And I think that is fantastic. It's awesome to be in that position against a program like Oklahoma that has been so good for 20 years now, and obviously has a tradition-rich history long before that. But again, they got good when our guy was running the show. They got back when our guy was running the show over there, and they've not really taken many steps since. They're in a tough spot now with the portal hurting their offensive line, with injuries hurting their offensive line, and, you know, again, working some youngsters. It's almost Friday. All my brain's about done. Working some youngsters into their game plan. It's tough. It applies at home. It applies on the road. It would apply if we could play football on Mars. If you have that mismatch that Tennessee's going to be able to create here, that they're going to create in a lot of games, then I think it's a recipe for disaster. As far as my prediction, it's funny. It's going to sound a lot like North Carolina State's prediction did. In fact, when we looked at that game, and I know we've processed it, we're beyond it, but I saw it as a 10, probably a 14-point win. That's about the territory I'm at now when you combat the advantages that Tennessee has with the fact that it is the primetime game of the week, the marquee game of the week, on the road in a really good environment, a great fan base, 7:30 Eastern kick that we know. It's going to be dark. Game day crew is going to be there. Herbie and Fowler calling the game, probably have the dog in the booth this time, I would imagine. All those things, I still think Tennessee overcomes the road aspect, the night aspect, and gets a win. I'm going to say 38-20. I think it's 14-10 with the opportunity to be a lot closer. One thing that we used to say on this podcast is I could see this team winning big. I could see Tennessee winning big. I can't see Oklahoma winning big unless the wheels absolutely fall off. And Tennessee, if nothing else, has executed these teams that they are more talented than, that they're faster than, that they're stronger than. They have executed those teams. And I don't mean just their assignments. They have put the foot on the throat. They've kept it there. And again, it leaves me no reason to think that they won't attempt to do that, especially with the fact of Hopple going back on Saturday night. I see no reason otherwise. And again, I feel right now about like I did on the week leading into the North Carolina State game. I'm gonna say 38-21, because again, I'm a little stitious. That's what I said entering that game. It's not just because of that. I think that's a very real possibility that Tennessee just wears and wears and wears on Oklahoma and finds some scores late or in the, you know, the last 20 minutes of the game to really make it look better than it was if it was a dogfight early. I mean, I think there's a chance of a defensive struggle with how good these defenses are, but what usually happens in those games is the deeper weapons, the deeper well to draw from, usually ends up coming out on top. So that's what I'm going to call for. I want to thank you so much for all the support, YouTube, podcast. We've seen great jumps just this week. We want to ask that you like, share, subscribe, do all those things. Continue checking us out, letting a friend know, letting a family member know, because what do we love more than these balls? And all we're doing is just two guys sharing our thoughts on that and really, really excited about the direction that it's taking. So thank you so much for checking out this episode. God bless. GBO.